Welcome to the Fantasy NASCAR Podcast. I'm Pierce Dietrich. This FanVice podcast is brought to you by FanVice. All kinds of daily fantasy sports information at FanVice. There's free stuff. There is paywalled stuff. You got daily fantasy football coming around. If you want to try to win $1 million, then FanVice is a good place. Manny, you'll remember, very close to winning that $1 million last year. He'll definitely help you out along with all the other dudes. It's Pocono this week, and we are a little overdue for an iRacing story. And don't worry, I will make this one quick. I ran Pocono for the first time ever on iRacing last week. I watched a couple YouTube videos, spent about 15 minutes memorizing the line, the braking patterns, downshifting in turn one and turn three, which is kind of cool. Blah, blah, blah. Side note, YouTube is awesome. Of course YouTube is awesome. Where have you been, Pierce? I've got Sling TV, and a lot of times I'm just a creature of habit. You just watch TV, but I've gotten in the habit of not watching Sling TV, not watching network TV, and just putting on YouTube, sitting down and learning stuff. It's a fun process. It's awesome. Did you know, there's some knowledge at you that I've obtained this week via YouTube. Did you know that we didn't believe there were other planets outside of our solar system until the 1980s? Until the 1980s, the popular belief was, nope, these are the only planets, they don't exist. But now we pretty much know that there are planets with every single star. It's pretty cool. There's got to be life out there, intelligent life, that has removed Pocono from their NASCAR schedule. The aliens, you know, they let the lower series run Pocono, but not in the Human Energy Cup series. I ran four laps of a Pocono race and I quit. Straight up, I quit. It's the most boring racetrack ever. I never quit. I was in fifth place, but I knew there was no way in hell I was going to catch the guy and win. I have never quit a race because it was boring. Racing is always exciting. I've had to back out because I needed to run more practice laps and I didn't want to be a lap or a Ricky Stenhouse. But I've never been bored racing. Pocono is without a doubt the worst track ever created. How in the hell Pocono has two NASCAR events is shocking. NASCAR reminds me a lot of the beginning of my fifth grade year. I came home from school, went up to my room, I got set up to do some homework. I was going to try to pretend to be a good student, or at least try to see what it's like to be a good student. And I sat there and I thought to myself, I still have 8 more years of this crap. It's going to be years before NASCAR gets fixed. NASCAR fans complain about everything. We complain way too much, but there are some things that we all agree on that are easy to fix. One Pocono race is enough. No Pocono races would be marvelous, but just one. Can we get one Pocono race? On the bright side, I get paid to record the podcast that I recorded a month ago all over again. Thank you, FanVice suckers. At the same time, you're going to be listening to this podcast all over again. So I guess that would make you a sucker too. And I should not say that about our loyal fans. So I appreciate you listening to the same podcast over again, but it's kind of crazy. I'm going to change things up a little bit, but the 2016 fall stats are the 2016 fall. To that point, the podcast is an endless cycle of a lot of the same information. And sometimes I pick up on something different, but it is kind of weird, folks. Kind of weird. At the same time, here's what I want you to do. Press play on the Pocono 1 podcast on your laptop, and then press play on the Pocono 2 podcast on your iPhone. You're probably going to need to throw in some psilocybin too if you want the total experience, but it'll be a blast. It'll be much more fun than the actual Pocono race. I'll tell you that. Let's look at the 2018 Pocono race. Happened, what, a little over a month ago, not even 2 months ago, a month ago, we ran in Pocono, and we're back at Pocono again. Does anyone out there think that's effing stupid? Who created this schedule? And I know the argument's going to be, well, it's in Pennsylvania. They can't run in the spring, and they can't run near the fall because it might be cold. You can run in the fall in Pocono. no one's going to die. The track's fine in September. The track's fine in October. Yeah, obviously, November is pushing it. August is fine. You can spread it out a little bit, NASCAR. You don't have to put them back to back. It can be done. Or you could just not race them twice a year, and it makes a lot of sense. Send your Pennsylvania hate to at Race for the Prize. 2018, Kevin Harvick scores the most fantasy points. He does not win the race. Kevin Harvick was the chalk. As I roll through this race in my head, and I'll go to Racing Reference to go through lap leaders and green flag runs. Real quickly, though, the race was extremely green, and this one went with Caution Fest at the end. And it's one of the themes that we've talked about in my FanVice articles each week, or every other week. I'll bring this up, not every single week. I try to write something different as much as I possibly can when you write about 40 races a year, and they're pretty much the same repetitive stories. So I try to be a little unique every once in a while. But one of the themes this season has been green races, extreme green races, and then green races that turn into caution fests at the end. And that's not necessarily a new pattern. That's existed for a while, but it seems to be pretty extreme this year. We're not getting a lot of cautions. We mentioned that early in the season. The debris caution, rest in peace. We get stage cautions. We get single car wrecks every once in a while. And then sometimes you get that late race caution and the whole thing goes pretty much into a blank show. Try not to curse on the show. I don't know why. It doesn't really matter. No one's listening to the podcast anyway. I noticed a couple times on Reddit this last week, people have been asking, hey, what's a NASCAR podcast? Not fantasy NASCAR, but what's a NASCAR podcast that I should be listening to? And no one ever mentions mine, which means no one's listening to mine. And I don't want you now to go, oh, I better, he's telling us to go to Reddit and mention him on the thread. I'm not telling you that. I would like for it to be organic. And if it ever comes up again, like if someone wants to mention it in the future, that is fine with me. But don't run over there and mention it now. Well, the point is, I don't think very many people are listening. The Google search results are pretty cool, and apparently I guess the guys at Reddit don't know how to use Google and can't say, how do I find a good NASCAR podcast? I guess I could go to Reddit, or I could Google NASCAR podcast. I think most people in the world, would, if you're looking for something, you type it into Google. And if you type in NASCAR podcast into Google, mine's not too far down the list. But maybe they did. Maybe they click on like, this guy is terrible. I'm not listening to this guy. But if that were the case, I would imagine someone on Reddit would be beating me up and saying, man, that guy is terrible. He just lists numbers the whole time, goes on these rants. The guy clearly hates himself. What is he doing recording podcasts about NASCAR? Every time I listen to it, I feel like I just need to take a razor blade to my throat. 2018, Kevin Harvick wins the race, and he had the car to beat. We'll go over practice speeds here in a second. One of the worries, if you remember, I'm sure that you had a lot of Kevin Harvick, just like I did, even though this was the week following Charlotte and probably should have learned our lesson about overexposure. But hey, that lesson probably will never be learned. Anyway, as you watch the early part of the race, Kevin Harvick does not start first, and he's not on the pole. And there are two major implications to that. The first one is that it takes him a while to overcome Ryan Blaney, at which point you're kind of squirming in your seat because you realize, hey, there's only 160 laps here. Let's get up there already. Now, Harvick tried desperately on that first lap, knowing that, hey, if I don't make this move now, it's going to be a while before I can get out front. And he just wasn't quite able to get in front of the inferior car, which, again, is a theme at Pocono. We see that throughout the entire race. The driver starting the restart on first, huge advantage. You cannot pass them. It just does not work. And so it takes a while. Harvick eventually passes him. Harvick scores 17.5 fast lap points, 22.25 lap sled points. He has the best car. He should have won, but the way the cautions fell and the way the pit road sequencing, not sequencing really, it's just the way his pit crew worked. It was, and a little bit of Ryan Blaney being a dick, and you'll see guys do this to Kevin Harvick a lot, that when Ryan Blaney pulls into his pit stop, he pulls in with his rear end hanging towards the back right, and he pulls in towards the back part of his pit stall, in the best way possible to block Kevin Harvick. It doesn't necessarily block Kevin Harvick, but it makes Kevin Harvick really jack the wheel to the right to exit pit road instead of being able to drive straight and drive faster off of his pit stall. Kevin Harvick scores, or Martin Truex Jr. scores the second most fantasy points. He's a race winner. He does not have the best car, but because of the last laps of the race, he ends up running 16 fast laps points, 7.75 laps led points. He scores 72 points. I have a drawing position of fourth, and that's basically where he was. He was behind Kyle Busch. He was behind Kevin Harvick for most of the race, but the pit road, well, the cautions work absolutely in his favor. He assumes the lead after a debris caution where Kyle Busch has the lead and Kyle Busch has to make a decision, and he probably made the wrong one, but he could stay out. Then the cars behind him are going to pit, and then he's in a precarious situation where he could get run down on a long run. But it wouldn't have happened because we saw what happened, because Martin Truex Jr. decides, well, I'm going to stay out when Kyle Busch goes into pit, because he realizes if I do exactly what Kyle Busch does, then I probably can't beat Kyle Busch. I'm going to be starting behind him and I'm going to be on the same tires, but it doesn't matter. He's going to have track position, cars being equal. That track position is going to make a difference. So Martin Truex Jr. stays out on old tires. He does not pit during the last, what, three pit road options. And he wins because you just simply cannot pass the leader going into turn one. And then out of turn one, the cars completely separate and it's over. Passing the leader, we'll go through, might as well look now and see if there were really any truly green flag passes. So Ryan Blaney gets run down 11 laps in by Kevin Harvick. Not a surprise. Then we have a situation where Johnson leads some laps, but that's because we're doing pit road sequencing. Brad Keselowski stays out, leads 7 laps. Big freaking surprise there. But eventually things cycle back and Kevin Harvick takes the lead. Martin Truex Jr. then leads 10 laps. I believe that was probably, yep, at end of a stage, I'm willing to assume. Yeah, I would assume that Truex stayed out. Probably what happened, I can't remember for sure, but I'm pretty certain. So Kevin Harvick is leading the end of stage one. And at the end of stage one, you'll remember that at Pocono, because it's such a long track, drivers inside the top 10. So if I'm in second, third, fourth, whatever place, I can go down pit road at the end of the stage. And then when the stage ends, the leader has to pit, I assume the lead. And we see that happen with Kevin Harvick, or with Martin Truex Jr. Then Martin Truex Jr., about 10 laps into the stage, hey, he's got to pit because he didn't pit when everyone else did. So Brad Keselowski then assumes the lead through pit cycling. We run through, and Kevin Harvick comes out as the leader. He leads 22 laps. Bubba Wallace stays out for a while during pit sequencing, and the Fox broadcast is going crazy, as they always do, to promote this guy. And then he proceeds to earned, I think, 2 speeding penalties, and then on a subsequent restart, he misses a shift. Well, doesn't miss a shift. What they do, instead of putting the car into third gear, they put the car into first gear, and they blow their engine up. Dale Earnhardt Jr. did that the year before. Clint Bowyer did that at Pocono this year. Kevin Harvick did it the year before, but somehow that master engine, I don't know, maybe it's the Yates guy. Well, that really has nothing to do with Yates, because Bowyer did the same thing in a Yates engine, but Harvick did it and was still able to nurse his car home for a second place finish last season. So Kevin Harvick takes the lead back. Eventually, Kyle Busch takes the lead, and I want to double check to make sure I'm right. Okay, so Kevin Harvick has the lead. Now, I've talked about this on the podcast before. I've talked about this in the articles. Here's the problem with Kevin Harvick. Well, Kevin Harvick's pit crew is not that good, and Kyle Busch's pit crew is pretty much amazing. It's the best in NASCAR. It wins him a lot of races. I've written about this in several articles lately, that Kyle Busch in traffic, he's not that good. He isn't. How many times have we seen Kyle Busch just run in traffic and then complain the entire race, but then his pit crew makes a couple moves, gives him 5, 6, 7 spots, gets him out into the front group, gets him near clean air, and he's a different guy. Kyle Busch is good. He's had an amazing car, so it's really hard to really rank these drivers on how good they are. I think one of the best ways of ranking drivers is if you look at Dale Earnhardt Jr. When you look at him when he was with DEI, and he clearly had an amazing car. He was winning, what, 8 races a year at one point? Amazing. Then he goes to Hendrick, which you think, oh man, Hendrick has great stuff. But they really didn't. Hendrick didn't have a good team for him. They didn't have a good car, and you saw him suffer for several years. At some point, I would say, 2014 it was, he had a pretty decent car and a pretty decent team and ended up winning four races. Now, they were at Pocono and they were at Plate Tracks, but he did win at Martinsville as well. So, a lot of it has to do when you're evaluating drivers with the equipment. And Kyle Busch has always had the best pit crew, and they've always had the best car. So, it's really hard to evaluate his talent. It just truly is. Either way, the point that I'm making is that when Kevin Harvick is in first and Kyle Busch is in second, you've got a major issue for Kevin Harvick, because when they come down pit road, if Kyle Busch, and it's not really much of an if the pit crew can have a half a second or, you know, a second quicker pit stop, then Kyle Busch is taking the damn lead. And if Kevin Harvick doesn't have the number one pit stall, he's losing the damn lead. And we've seen this before, and Pocono was a perfect example of that. Kyle Busch got to second place. Now, was he 5 seconds behind? Yes, he was. He wasn't even close, but he was in second place behind Kevin Harvick. You get a pit, or you get a caution, they come down together. They enter the pits at the exact same time. Harvick doesn't have the benefit of stall number one because it's Ryan Blaney, and Ryan Blaney's doing his best to throw in a little block job, and Kyle Busch has a quicker pit stop. He takes the lead. You can't pass the leader on the restarts. Game over, right? Well, not so much. This is the point where the cautions start to go a little goofy and crazy, at which point Kyle Busch says a NASCAR driver threw his booty on the track to cause a debris caution. We know that it was probably some sort of piece of metal that was hitting cars and damaging cars. It was a real debris caution. Nonetheless, we look at stage three of this race, and you've got a 19-lap run to start stage three. You get a caution from the 99 car, and at that point Kyle Busch takes over the lead, leads 10 laps. But then we get a debris, we get a Hamlin Bowman wreck on a restart, we get a Eric Jones, who was a very popular play, Joey Logano, Ryan Newman wreck on a restart. We get the cautions at the end. You can't pass the leader. So it goes. And that's the race, folks. Eric Almirola scores the third most fantasy points. He was chalk. He started 34th, although Almirola had not raced well at Pocono in the past. He had not raced Pocono in the number 10 car for SHR in the past. A lot of that can be said at every single racetrack that we go to. You kind of want to just throw out a lot of the career numbers for Eric Almirola, because this is a different guy when you put him in a different car. Brad Keselowski ends up with the fourth most fantasy points. He drives from 17th to 5th. It's not a bad play. He's expensive. It was hard to fit him into an optimal lineup. If you put him in an optimal lineup, that means you are sacrificing not just Kyle Busch. He probably wanted to sacrifice Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. It was really difficult. Very safe cash play, starting 17th, going to 5th. And at the same time, I mean, if we get that situation this week, you should tell yourself, hey, Brad Keselowski's a very good history at Pocono. He's going to work his way up to the front, even though he's not going to be the car to beat. He's going to get you 10 place differential points in that situation. And he's going to get you solid finishing position points in that situation. Also, we know that Brad Keselowski is going to not manipulate the system, but play within it. He's going to stay out when other drivers go in for their green flag pit stops. He's going to go out and hope that, hey, maybe if there's a caution, I'll get to keep my track position and win this race. Because that's the only possibility he has at winning the race. And if you look at the way the track will probably, he'll probably, by the time we get to lap 30, we have that first green flag pit stop, the drivers in the top 10 get first dibs on deciding who stays out and who gets lead laps. And you look at top 10 drivers, and no one else is stupid enough to do that, or no one else is willing enough to admit that, I ain't got a chance. Brad Keselowski's team doesn't really admit that. They pretend that, nope, we're just being very smart. Well, sure, you're not. You're just being cute. You're being cute, and you're unwilling to admit that your car sucks, and that maybe your driver isn't that good. Maybe your driver won a championship once upon a time in an ancient galaxy, but he's not winning a championship anytime soon, or if ever again. But hey, you got that one championship trophy up on your mantle, and that's cool and all. But that's going to be the guy who you would want to circle and think, well, you know, I can pivot to this guy possibly. Kyle Busch ends up with the fifth most fantasy points, starts fifth, finishes third, 8.5 fast lap points, 3.25 laps led points, not enough, 54.75. Kyle Busch did not end up in optimal lineups, probably helped you cash, but what? 54 points at his price tag. You got to remember, only 160 laps this week. It's going to be tough to pay elevated prices. This isn't quite Sonoma. It's not Sonoma by any means. But even though Sonoma wasn't even Sonoma. The profile doesn't fit the profile. That's one of those tired cliche crime movies. That one with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Gosling. Not a bad movie, but a lot of thrown around cliches in that movie. Michael Pitt's in that too. It's not bad. Not a bad popcorn movie. I can't remember the name of it, so sorry. I can't really tell you what to watch, so I'll save your time, and you don't have to go watch that movie. Anyway, Kyle Busch didn't really, but his average running position was third. A lot of why he wasn't able to put a monster number on the board was because of those late race cautions. If this race stays yellow at the end, well, I mean, kind of playing it both ways there. Because if the race completely stays green, then Kevin Harvick stays in the lead. If you get one caution, then Kyle Busch takes over the lead, and a lot of those fast lap points that Truex earned, a lot of those laps led points that Truex earned, go towards Kyle Busch. If the race experiences a lot of cautions, then it goes to the next guy in line, and that ended up being Martin Truex Jr. If Kevin Harvick would have been able to pass Martin Truex Jr. from third to second, that would have been a very significant pass, but Truex was able to hold on. Passing just doesn't happen very much at Pocono. Now, someone's going to point out, but Eric Almirola went from 34th to 7th. Well, first of all, he wasn't a 34th place race car. And fast cars are going to pass slower cars. There's not going to be a lot of passing inside the top 10. We'll just all agree on that. Kyle Larson, 13th to 2nd, but no fast lap points, no laps led points. Fine in the race, look good. But if you're going to spend a lot of money, it will be really hard to spend money on guys that are not leading the race. And the guys that are leading the race are going to be superstars and superstars that start on the front row. That is the trend. We'll dig into that here in a bit. Matt Kenseth. Yeah, so Matt Kenseth makes it through. He was a terrible play. He was a terrible play. Matt Kenseth's average running position was 26th. He finished 13th. Say that again. His average running position, 26th. He finished 13th. He was not a good play. But when you get all of these cautions at the end, and you get a bunch of restarts, anything can happen, especially when you take out the 11 car, the 88 car, the 20 car, the 22 car, the 31 car. That's five positions right there from Matt Kenseth. So those are gimmies. So now that means he's only going to make about five moves on restarts. And if you make the right move on restart, you're going to be able to hold your position throughout the race, or at least till the end of the race. But nonetheless, Matt Kenseth ends up with 44 points. And he becomes a value play in the optimal lineup. And that's another issue. The optimal lineup that we'll go over here in a second, a lot of it is, I mean, it's completely influenced by all of the cautions at the end, because all of the cautions at the end opened up the right value. And with these value guys like Matt Kenseth scoring 44 points, which he had really no business scoring 44 points, Paul Menard scoring 42 points, although he was halfway decent. He didn't really luck out. Stenhouse lucks out. And I believe I was on Stenhouse that week. God help me. Chris Buescher as well comes through. And they weren't really in play. Stenhouse, average running position, 24th. Chris Buescher, average running position, 26th. That's where they should have finished. But because of the wrecks, obviously they all gained five spots when Hamlin, Bowman, Jones, Logano, and Ryan Newman went out. That's five spots right there. So then it's just, hey, grab a couple spots on your own if you can. If you can't, no big deal. You've pretty much hit value. Now we're just talking about reaching optimal levels. Jimmy Johnson is going to have the eighth best fantasy score. He had a decent day. Average running position of 10, 43.5 fantasy points. I don't have his price tag in front of me. He ran pretty much where he practiced. Or, well, he finished where he ran. He averaged a 10th place position. And he finished 8th. Paul Menard averages an 18th place position. He ends up finishing 11th. So, again, I mean, it really is similar to Matt Kenseth. Because he went all... Well, Kenseth is really extreme. 26th to 13th is pretty crazy. Menard 18th to 11th, that's still pretty high. And 18th is his average running position. Starting position was 20th. Ryan Blaney starts first, finishes 6th. He gets you some hog points at the beginning. But as we all knew, you know, he was going to have to step out of the way and let Harvick by, let Kyle Busch by, let Martin Truex Jr. by, let Kyle Larson by. And, you know, he would end up somewhere towards the back end of the top 10. And those negative place differential points pretty much erase all of his hog points. He ends up with only his finishing position points. That's not going to get it done, even in the $8,000 range. Stenhouse, the 11th best score, mentioned why he was successful. Chase Elliott with the 11th best score. He runs 8th all day. He finishes 10th. So another good performance by Hendrick Carr. 2.5 fast lap points, but you wouldn't have paid up for him. Just would not have done it. Chris Buescher, already mentioned that. Logano ends up finishing 9th, so forget the Logano. He was in a wreck thing. That's not an easy gimme point. So he was actually able to carry on and finish 9th. David Reagan goes from 21st to 16th. His average running position, though, was 23rd. I believe Reagan was a punt in one of the optimal lineups that you could have constructed. Austin Dillon, average running position of 16th. He starts 12th, finishes 12th. Not really that exciting. You probably wouldn't have played him. Michael McDowell, 30th to 21st. Average running position, 26th. A little bit of a bump, obviously, because of the cautions. Ty Dillon getting into a top 20 DFS score. A rare occurrence this year. But he pulls it off. But what is not a rare occurrence is his average running position in this race. His average running position was 27th. That is the worst of any of these top 20 DFS scores. That is the worst of, it's 27th. That's where it is. This is what it is. So he finishes, he runs, 0% of his laps inside the top 15. He drives from 29th to 23rd. He benefits from cars wrecking out. He didn't even make good moves on the restart. He didn't make good moves in the restart. He is the example of, Hamlin, Bowman, these guys are not in the race anymore. So here's 4 points, kid. Don't spend it on one, or 4 spots, kid. Don't spend it on one place. William Byron, 16th to 18th, average running position of 14th. AJ Allmendinger, 24th, 22nd. Average running position of 20th. He ran a little bit better than that. And the thing is, so when we do these restarts, if someone moves forward, then guess what? Somebody's got to move back. And AJ Allmendinger lost some spots towards the end. It's a zero-sum game, folks. Cole Custer, I don't believe he was in the player pool, but he scored the 21st most fantasy points. I don't really want to go through anybody else. Clint Boyer was running, average running position of 7th. Very good race. 94.4% of his laps inside the top 15. And he had that issue with his gear shifter, as I mentioned. Anything else stand out? Denny Hamlin ran really well, did not finish well. So if we look at practice here for the 2018 Pocono race as we go through. So we went through lap leaders and we went through, well, I don't know if I specifically said cautions. I might as well tell you right now. So you got the orders of the caution. So we get a 51 lap run, stage one. So stage one, completely green. Stage two, 45 lap run. Caution for the end of the stage. So the first two stages, completely green. Nothing. Long runs. People going laps down. Even though it's hard to go a lap down at Pocono on a 2.5 mile racetrack, people find a way. So there we go. 19 lap run here in stage three. The 99 car spins. Who is the 99 car? Why is that? Why am I blanking? Oh, it's Derek Cope. Derek Cope. Oh, man. Then we go 10 laps, and then we get a debris in turn one. It was legitimate debris. Then we've got restarts, and, well, here we go. So restart wreck with Hamlin and Bowman, even though I think it was a lap and a half around, but still. Anything close to the first two laps on a restart, people are still jockeying for position, at least a lot more so than when the race spreads out. You get wrecks. And then from that rack, we then get another caution, and that is the 20, the 22, the 31. And we go from completely green to just enough cautions at the end to give some wave arounds, to give some lucky dogs, even though you really don't need that many, because why? Because why? Well, because there's not a lot of cars that go a lap down on this giant track. Looking at the lucky dogs, and it's Bubba, it's Kurt Busch, it's David Reagan. Or is that Michael McDowell? That's David Reagan, Busher, the 51. I think that's Cole Custer. And then Daniel Suarez. I don't know. But in terms of lead lap finish, I don't know why my window is so messed up. In terms of lead lap finish, we've got 27 cars on the lead lap. One of those is Alex Bowman, the guy who was in a wreck. 26 cars in the lead lap. It's a lot of cars in the lead lap. That's a lot of opportunities if you can get some cautions at the end for a driver to gain some spotzos. There's your basic run. So very green and then kind of a caution fest there at the end. And that gives you 26 cars on the lead lap. If we look at practice, you know what? Let's look at penalties. Don't often do this, and I think it's worth looking at today. Penalties in this race: Bubba, Cole Whit, Greg Gosh, geez, Derek Cope, Michael. All right, don't even worry. Look at these penalties: Bubba, Cole Whit, Greg Golding, Derek Cope, Michael McDowell, Daniel Suarez, Paul Menard. All of them tire violations. Too many men over the wall. The too fast exiting was Derek Cope. Who cares? And Bubba Wallace. Everybody else pretty spotless. It's interesting. You expect a couple more pit road violations at Pocono, but didn't happen. So you had two green flag pit stops, and people did not do it. Martin Truex Jr. was fast in practice. Third on the short run, fourth on the long run, out of 21 cars. So that's a decent amount of cars making long runs in practice, too. Definitely a number that you would be able to analyze. But Kyle Larson was sixth in the short run, second on the long run. Kyle Busch, first in the short run, fifth in the long run. Kevin Harvick, second on the short run, first on the long run. Your big four were all incredibly fast in practice. All of them. Harvick, hog points the most. Truex, second most hog points. I believe he had about 15 less. Kyle Busch, hog points. He had 11 hog points, which is about 15 less than Martin Truex Jr. And then Kyle Larson with absolutely no hog points. Thanks, Larson. What the hell are you doing there? And then from there, you got Brad Keselowski. Shows no speed whatsoever in practice. But, hey, what are you going to do? Sometimes we see that with Keselowski, just kind of trying to figure stuff out. Blaney wins the pole. He's clearly just good in practice. Eighth on the short run in practice one. Seventh on the practice short run in two. Sixth on the long run in practice two. Just barely beats Harvick, by the way, to win the pole by a fraction of a second. Almirola, fifth. Short run, seventh. Long run in practice two. Starting 34th. Chalk Sitte. Jimmy Johnson, not fast at all. But he starts 15th, and I guess he just uses that track position to maintain. Logano looks about like a 10th place car. Logano is about a 10th place car, minus the wreck towards the end. Oh, well, also Logano, I want to say, and I didn't see it on here. I thought he had some pit issues where he had to come down, and I thought he got hit with a pit penalty. I don't think, yeah. I didn't see it. But I'm pretty sure that he fueled up when he wasn't supposed to. I guarantee he had something. I remember he had a bunch of issues, and he had to battle back to get onto that lead lap. So I'm not really worried about his average running position showing up as 20th. I know he had a lot better of a car. Chase Elliott, you'd probably say around 10th to 15th place car, and that's what he was. Paul Menard looked decent in practice. And I think he's about where he was in practice, 9th and then 17th. And in the race, his average running position was 18th. Austin Dillon, 21, 16, 13 on the long run. His average running position was 16th. Starting 12th, you probably say, not for me. Matt Kenseth, 18-24, 21st in the long run, but remember that's 21st out of 21 cars. So you got to be careful. Like, oh man, he's 21st fastest. Should be around 21st. Yeah, that's because half the cars didn't make long runs. He's 18th, though, on a short run and 24th on a short run. And really, that does matter at Pocono, where once you get going, it's just going to be lap turning. And there will be fall off, but the aero difference is going to make someone's going to have to have a really beautiful car to be able to pass you on a long run. Stenhouse and Kenseth starts 26th. And guess where his average running position was? 26th. Got lucky there at the end, though. Stenhouse, very similar numbers to Kenseth in practice and very similar results to Kenseth in the race. JB McMurray, 17th, 10th, 11th. His average running position was 14th. Seems to make sense to me. David Reagan, 29, 28, 19 on the long run. His average running position, 23rd. He started 21st. Makes a lot of sense. Practice and starting positions seem to have a great input on what the drivers do in race. And I can keep on going through, and it's pretty much the same thing. Clint Boyer had a very fast car in practice. His average running position during the race was 7th. He was up there. He's never quite in the mix with the other guys. But ultimately, he's got an average finish of 7th, and he finishes the race 20th. So those last 10 to 15 laps destroyed his average running position when he blew his engine up. But still, his average running position was 7th, which means he's probably inside the top 5 the entire day. And his car was 8th on the short run, 3rd on the long run. I would respect starting position this week. I would respect your practice times this week. Let's look at some optimals as we continue on in the Pocono Fantasy NASCAR podcast, brought to you by FanVice.com. I was thinking what it must be like to work at NASCAR or to be Brian France. I imagine he calls a meeting, Mike Helton's there, they come in and just wonder, what do they possibly even talk about? They come in and, well, you know, what are we going to do with the tracks? Well, the tracks, Brian, are up to the tracks. They run their separate entities, and the schedule's set for the next couple years. All right, so that's taken care of. What about these cars that people are complaining about? Well, Brian, we can't really change the cars every week. That would make the teams go bankrupt, so we kind of got to leave them. Okay, well, what about sponsorship? We've got Monster until the rest of the year, and then next year we got, different racetracks will have different sponsors. They'll just be different weekends. Okay, all right, so, you know what? I think I'm going to call it a day, and I'm going to get out of here, have a couple whiskey drinks, and see where that takes me. And the next day, Brian comes in, he meets with everybody, brings in Mike Helton. All right, guys, so what about the tracks? Brian, the tracks are taken care of. Okay, the cars, taken care of. Sponsorship, taken care of. All right, I'm going to call it an early day, have a couple whiskey drinks, and see where that takes me. What do these guys talk about? What does Brian France and Mike Helton have? Like, they come in, like, there's nothing you can do with the tracks. The tracks stay the same. The tracks are in control of the tracks. Cars are the cars. Teams are the teams. What do they possibly do? Well, let's look at this TV contract. Well, Brian, the TV contract is set up for the next 10 years. Really nothing we can do about that one either. Okay. All right, looks good. Then we'll call it an early day. Grab a couple whiskey drinks and see where that takes me. What do they do? You can think of every other business that's trying to create new products, expand their product, do things differently, explore options. Doesn't seem to happen at NASCAR. I must be the easiest job in the world. Show up. I mean, it's like being a phantom employee for a banana republic or some socialist government in South America where you just get a paycheck. You don't really do anything. Thank you, Pincho. Is that Pinchot? Is that his name? Not the guy from Perfect Strangers. The guy that was not Evita's husband either. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've studied Latin American history, but I do know that their move towards socialism was an absolute disaster. But you can't really blame them. A lot of that has to do with international banks encouraging them to create all these entitlements and help out their people, and then financing it. And then once these governments did all that and realized, oh wait, we've got to pay back these international banks, we don't have money, the South American governments have kind of become they're controlled by international banks. They have to do whatever the banks tell them to do because they're in so much debt. And the people are so entitled at this point where if you take anything away from them, they're going to lose their damn mind. Anyway, so that's Latin America. Poor Latin America. And Venezuela's got it really bad right now. They got to the point where they invented their own Bitcoin, which I don't think you can really do that. I mean, you can. I mean, everyone creates fiat currencies, but if the government has a fiat currency that doesn't work and people have already pretty much thrown out, when you create an electronic version of it, like, no one's going to buy in. Who's going to believe that you're, okay, well, you know what? You manipulated the paper-based one where you actually had to physically print the crap out. Now one that you can just create every single second with a computer, yeah, you're not going to manipulate that one either. Come on. I feel bad. People in Venezuela are literally starving. They are starving. They have nothing to eat. I mean, we're getting to the point where what you saw in, I think it was Ukraine during the communist revolutions, where you had to remind people not to eat their children. They were, you can Google it up. Google, please remember, don't eat your children. There are propaganda billboards telling people that, we know you're starving, and we know times are bad, but just remember the golden rule, don't eat your children. It's about like that in Venezuela right now. But you would never know that because there's only about one issue that we talk about in America. And you're not going to hear me talk about that on the podcast. Eric Almirola, obviously, is in the optimal lineup. Chalk, 8,200, starting in the back. Nearly ruined by that debris caution. You'll remember. Maybe you won't because you don't hang on to every word of a broadcast like I do because I'm a lunatic, but you'll remember Eric Almirola coming on the radio after hitting debris saying, my gauges are all red. I'm in a bad spot. And I'm on the floor getting out the defibrillators. I'm in a bad spot as well. But apparently he was fine and ends up finishing seventh. That was the week after Kevin Harvick destroyed my lineups. Kevin Harvick's chalk blazing fast. He comes through even at 11,600. He reaches value. He's in the optimal lineup. I got a couple optimal lineups up on here. I don't know. This first one I'm reading actually isn't the best. They're all within 2 points of each other. Martin Truex Jr. is in this lineup. Fast laps. Laps that we went over why he was definitely going to be one of those plays of your top three hogs. You had Kyle Busch. You had Martin Truex Jr. You had Kevin Harvick when you were building lineups. Guys that you wanted to try to squeeze in. Maybe you consider Kyle Larson a little bit. Maybe you had Brad Keselowski as a pivot. But we would all agree that the three most popular plays would have been Truex, Busch, and Harvick. And it was just a matter of sequencing them in your... not really even doing that. It's just punching them into your fantasy cruncher if you build enough lineups. Then where it gets a little interesting, and it always does, folks. So you can do a good job of picking the hogs. You can do a good job of identifying the chalk. And congratulations. I can as well. We're all geniuses. But where money is won is by nailing these guys that do better than they should have. The unforeseen happens. Paul Menard, average position of 18th. And he does what he's supposed to do. He runs 18th most of the race. He's okay. He's not someone you absolutely have to play. If he finishes where he runs, it's not the play. But you get the cautions at the end, and he finishes 11th. Chris Buescher, you know, he's just a value punt that you would have thrown in building a bunch of lineups, but he was not. His average running position was 26th. You get the cautions at the end. He finishes 17th by running really well on the restarts. Again, you lucked out. Maybe there's something to it. Maybe Chris Buescher is very good at finishing races or on restarts. I haven't really looked into that. This Pocono result would imply that that's the case. He has 15 top 25s this season, so he's doing something right. Average finish is 22nd, but he got lucky. David Reagan, slow in practice. But he had track position. You know, I wouldn't say Reagan was more lucky gutsy. He ends up finishing 16th. He has the track position to stay where he stays. But that's really not the best lineup. So the absolute best lineup is Almirola, Harvick, Truex, Kenseth, Busher Reagan. So you get Kenseth. Again, we've went over what Kenseth was. Just got lucky there at the end. So, hey, you identified a Harvick Truex lineup. Not that hard, so I can't really give you any credit for that. You put Eric Almirola in there too. So half of your lineup is done, and you really haven't had to do any work. Now you got to do work, but it's not really work. It's just put in some guys that fit mathematically and hope that the gods do you a favor. And if you came up with Busher Reagan, not crazy, and I think Kenseth is a little crazy, I would probably be more likely to put Menard in, which scores 2 points less. But you put Kenseth in, it works. It does. Actually, it might be a better lineup than that. Let me double check. Yeah, there is. There's one where you can get 335. I'm sorry, 335 with a little more tweaking. Now, you could have put a Keselowski lineup. Did score 329 points. So the first lineup I read was 328, then 330, then 329. So if you want Almirola, Harvick, Keselowski, then you can get Menard, then you can get Busher, then you can get Kenseth into your lineup as well. That's cool, but do you really need Keselowski? Because you can take Keselowski out, and guess what? You can fit in. Well, you got to make a slight change, but anyway, you make a slight change. Otherwise, so just go back over that. What makes that lineup a little bit different? I mean, we've seen Busher, Kenseth, Menard, Harvick, Almirola, but you can get Keselowski. You got $800 on the table. So then, if you're like me, you're thinking, well, and I don't really like the Keselowski play. Say, you know, I can maybe upgrade Keselowski. If you upgrade Keselowski to Truex, that requires $1,100. You don't got that. You got $800. But, so you take Keselowski, you turn him into Truex, then you take Busher at $5,900, and you dial him down to David Reagan at $5,600, and you got $50,000 spent exactly, and you got 335 fantasy points. Harvick gets you 78, Truex gets you 73, Kenseth gets you 44, Eric Almirola 65 with his chalk, Reagan 33, Menard 42. And yes, all of those guys benefited from the cautions at the end. Without the cautions, you take 6 points away from Reagan, you take points away from Menard, you take a ton of points away from Kenseth, but so it goes. Should I go into the 2017 Pocono Fall Race? I've already gone over them in last time's podcast, but I know that you're not going to go back and like, all right, let me find this Pocono 1 podcast and listen to it. Although that would be a smart plan because that would generate more clicks and more downloads. 2017 Fall Pocono Race. You know I'm not going to do that to you. Kyle Busch starts first, finishes first, 18 fast lap points, 18.5 laps led. He pretty much controls the entire race. I can't remember for sure. I'll go, but I might as well try to look this up. But I think the only time that he loses his lead might be due to stages or pit sequencing. He's clearly got the best car. He should have won the 2017 spring race, but if you remember in that race, he late race caution, he's in first place, and again, he has the decision, which you'd think this guy would have learned. In 2017 spring race, he decides, I'm going to stay out because if I pit, everyone's going to stay out, and then I'm not going to be able to pass them. Actually, I'm wrong. He couldn't have learned from this, so yeah, so here's what happened. He stays out in the spring race 2017 on really old tires, just too old of tires, and Ryan Blaney passes, and Ryan Blaney wins the race. 2017 fall race, we go green to the finish, he wins. 2018, he decides, staying out last time didn't work out for me, I'm going to pit. Well, the tires weren't old enough, and Martin Truex Jr., you can't really pass him on the restart, so man, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You kind of feel sad. You feel sorry a little bit for Kyle Busch because in the situation, he's willing to admit, like, you know what? The strategy we used last year didn't work. We admit we made a mistake. Let's do it differently this time. And they do it differently, and it doesn't work. What they did the first time would have worked. So I do feel bad for them. Not that he's listening, nor if he would really even care. I'm pretty sure Kyle Busch would hate me. Martin Truex Jr., no surprise. He's your second with 11 fast lap points, 7.75 laps led points. Starts second, finishes third. We look at every 2017 race, and it's Truex, and it's Busch. Brad Keselowski squeezes his way up there to a third place fantasy score. And it's only 52 fantasy points, folks. 52 points gets you third place on the DFS scoreboard. 6 place differential points going from 11th to 5th, 5.5 fast lap points, 1.5 laps led points. Not really. What I think of there is when I see only 1.5 laps led, probably didn't play the shenanigan move that we have seen him do this year. But what I think he did, if he ran 5.5 fast lap points, is that maybe he hit pit road a little bit sooner than Kyle Busch or Martin Truex Jr., so he came back onto the track with solid track position and fresh tires, and that allowed him to accrue fast lap points. You see, same thing with Harvick, 5.5 fast lap points, no laps led, 51.5 points. Finishes second, started sixth. I don't believe this was the race where he had a blown up engine. I think that was the spring race. Nonetheless, finished second. Pretty sure he finished second in both Pocono races last year. And he didn't finish second this year. I think he finished third, but had the fastest car. How did I forget that? I mean, we just talked about the race 2 seconds ago. Whatever. Denny Hamlin finishes fourth. Very good at Pocono. And as Fox always mentions, Denny Hamlin was really good before they repaved this track. Yeah, he was. But they repaved the track. Who cares? You keep rolling that statistic out there every single year. Just like here in about 2 months, Mike Joy, well, he's not going to do it because Mike Joy's not broadcasting the fall races. But next spring when we go to Dover, well, you know, they had to build that walkway because they were going to build a tunnel, but then they got 4 feet under the ground and hit the water with water table. I like Mike Joy. I think he's a very sharp guy. He's connected to the internet. I don't know if he's on Reddit as much. He used to be on those news servers or newsrooms. If you were a super nerd in the late 90s like I was and were part of those, like you would go to my, I don't even know what they're really called anymore. It's been so long ago, but you go to Microsoft Outlook or your email system, and then you could go into, I can't remember how you got there, but it opened up like these newsrooms or whatever they were called. They were like message boards before message boards. And yeah. It was nerd life back then on the 56K dial-up modem, Greenfield, Ohio, where just really no connection to the outside world. But yeah, Mike Joy is, I like him a lot. I like to pick on some of the silly things he says, but I've got an hour to kill each week. I got to talk about something, and I like to fire off dumb twits on Twitch or tweets on Twitter. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Kenseth runs well, Dale Earnhardt Jr. runs well. Not really surprising for those guys, but nothing in terms of big-time fantasy points. They do all right. Jr. goes from 23rd to 12, and that's good, and you probably would have played him, but they're not hogs. They're not elite. Eric Jones, 9th to 8th. Clint Boyer, 7th to 6th. Ty Dillon, 30th to 17th. Average running position, 21st. Ty Dillon was, Dylan was a lot better of a race car driver. I don't know if it's to do with the crew chief change, but at the moment, that's the only variable that's changed. And if I have to admit, like, why is Ty Dylan not any good anymore? You look at the variables, and I don't want to say that it's because he's spending too much time making YouTube videos. Get off the YouTube! I thought you just said YouTube was fun and excellent. Well, YouTube is good if you're watching it, but it takes a lot of work to record and write and make your own videos. And that's time you probably should spend working on, you know, racing, if that's what you do for a living, is racing. Watching videos, it doesn't take that much time. You get it? Okay, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, but I've never really watched one of his YouTube videos, so I don't know if he actually sits down and writes and edits, and he probably has a guy that does all this for him. And I remember him on Twitter and I think on Reddit advertising, like, I need a videographer and I need someone to do all the work for me because I don't want to do it. I just want to walk around the camera and be cool. Well, you probably need to work on that part too. Anyway, good last year, not good this year. I would like to believe that it's the crew chief change that's led to his demise. Or maybe it's the videos. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. runs from 21st to 16th. Average running position 16th. Suarez 8 to 7. Average running position 10th. Remember, this is 2017 fall Pocono race, or really just 2017 July Pocono race. Casey Kane, 12th to 11th. Kurt Busch, 18th to 13th. Newman, 20 to 14th. Danica Patrick, 22-15. Paul Menard, 27th to 19th. David Reagan, 33-22. He would be your punt that comes through for his average running position was 21st. Hopefully, I've got the information here. I've already forgotten from before, but maybe he was good in practice. Austin Dillon starts 26th, finishes 21st. The race is a lap turner, like many of Pocono races before and after it. And Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. do what they're supposed to do. Let me look. So you get... did I go over this already? So we got five cautions. You got a 60-lap green flag run to end the race. 60-lap green flag run to end the race. That's pretty impressive. Let me see how many cars were on the lead lap in that race. Wow. So usually Pocono, you're not going to get a lot of cars that go a lap down because it's a 2.5-mile racetrack. Hard to lap somebody. But you get a 60-lap green flag run, it's going to happen. And in this case, it did happen. We only had 16 cars finish on the lead lap. Just 16. Ty Dillon was your first car a lap down. And that happens when we had a wreck. So if we look at the wrecks, heck, they even debris cautioned this damn thing up too, and they still couldn't work their magic. So we get the start of the race, and at the start of the race, I remember seeing this, going into turn one, watching this on YouTube now. We get the 3 car, the 10 car, the 20 car, 27 car, 32 car, 37 car, 43 car, and 95 car all get collected in turn one, spreading out. One guy gets loose, and you get wrecks like that, especially at Pocono, where people are spread out on the back stretch, or in the front stretch, and then you enter turn one at a lot of different spots. And one car getting loose is going to slide into a bunch of different cars at the very beginning. Once we spread out, that's not going to happen. But we get that wreck, and then they go 44 laps into stage one. We start stage two. We get a wreck at the beginning. Kane and Jimmy Johnson run 9 laps. Debris caution. Great. Then we get a 27-lap run, stage two. Then we get a 55-lap run. Stage three goes completely green. Completely green. It's a pretty caution-free race. This year's Pocono was a very caution-free race, but they threw in just a little bit of salt there at the end, and we got some cautions that mixed things up and completely changed the dynamics of the optimal lineup. You didn't get that. I don't know if I have the optimal lineup here in front of me, but you would assume that, well, because of those results, because it went really green, we would get a pretty conservative finish. Let me check. Let me see if I got the optimal round here somewhere, because I am intrigued. I dug through my spreadsheets, and I did. I was able to locate the optimal lineups from last fall's Pocono race. And the theory is that, hey, we got a 60-flag run here at the end, and not a bunch of cautions. We talked about the 2018 race. What happens when you have a bunch of cautions at the end? You get the restarts, and you give opportunities to these drivers who run 26th, end up finishing 13th, and they pretty much break the optimal lineup. But what happens if that doesn't happen? What if we go green all the way to the end, and drivers pretty much finish where they're supposed to finish? What does that lineup end up looking like? So Kyle Busch in your optimal lineup with 82 fantasy points. Truex at 10,500, 58.75 points. That's 5.666 FPPK. Not that great, but he works into this optimal lineup. Kozlowski as well with his 52 fantasy points. So those aren't really that crazy. Get it? Busch, Truex, Kozlowski. You only have two hogs anyway, so you might as well put Truex in. He's not a big-time hog, but when you got one driver that dominates the race, that does allow you to overspend on a Truex or a Kozlowski. Well, there's two reasons why you could overspend on a Truex or Kozlowski. It's that, one, this flag went. This race was a very green race, and that means that there's only one hog. There just isn't anyone else. There isn't a second hog that you go after, so you just take the guys that score the most points. The other issue is, so when this race goes really green and drivers finish where they're supposed to, you don't necessarily have a lot of guys that get these giant place differential boosts, guys that really didn't deserve to finish where they were that you would want in your lineup. They don't exist because you finish where you run, and you don't get the caution where you get Matt Kenseth, who gains 13 place differential points at the end that he probably didn't deserve. That didn't happen. You don't have to squeeze those guys into your lineups because they just don't exist. You kind of just take the raw points, and the points are much lower in this race. The high score in this race is 309 compared to the 335 that we saw with the Caution Fest at the end of 2018. So again, Busch, Truex, Keselowski, not the craziest thing. Keselowski was starting, I think he gave you a spot to get about 8. He started 11th, and he was fast enough, right? So it wasn't the worst play in the world. Maybe you went with Harvick, whatever. That would have been too expensive and tough to build. Maybe it took Hamlin, but Hamlin was starting 4th. You know, you wouldn't necessarily have had to go that way. But building a lineup with Kyle Busch and Truex and Keselowski, that's not really off the wall. It's not necessarily chalk. Going Truex and Busch would have been chalk. Putting Keselowski, it's not chalk, but it's not a pivot either. So then you're left with 3 more positions. And let me see, how much exactly monies do you have? You got about $20,000 left for 3 drivers. Let me just do that quick calculation. Was that around $6,000-ish for each of them? So, I mean, our general thing is, hey, let's throw in a punt. We always seem to do that when we build lineups, and that would have worked here. David Reagan is your punt at 5,100, 33 fantasy points, starts 33rd, and that's a great place to take Reagan. If you're like me, whenever you can get David Reagan starting outside the top 30, then you're definitely going to play him. And so playing Reagan, while he may not be chalk, he is a punt. He would have been a very popular punt. Let's compare him to some of these other punts to see like where he would have ranked popularity-wise going in. Ty Dillon was 6,600, so he wouldn't have been in that same tier. I see Cole Witt starting 32nd at 4,900. He would have been a possibility. He ends up finishing 24th, so Cole Witt ends up with 28 fantasy points. Not a bad play either. Cole Witt on paper ahead of the race, starting 32nd. You think, you know what, you could probably do halfway decent. And look, there's not even any cautions here to do him a favor. He just runs an average running position of 25th. He's Cole Witt. He's not a bad driver. So you got Cole Witt, David Reagan, preferably. The optimal lineup has David Reagan, but if you put Cole Witt in, you'll lose 3 points and maybe you'll lose out on $50,000, but you were pretty close. You couldn't have fault yourself for making that play. Obviously, Ty Dillon works. Ty Dillon starting 30th last year, you would have pretty much locked him in. I know 6,600 seems like a lot this year, but last year it didn't. $6,000 range for Ty Dillon, who was consistently finishing around 20th, you would not have had a problem. That was a very chalky play, and he did what you thought he would do. What, he ended up finishing 17th? That's what Ty Dillon was very capable of doing last year. And he was starting 30th. So, again, I would put Reagan towards very popular. I would have put Ty Dillon to almost chalk. Kyle Busch was chalk. Martin Truex Jr. was chalk. So that really only leaves us with 2 plays that you really had to scratch your head in building this optimal lineup for a green race. And that's the way not the way it should be, but that's the way it works. When we have Caution Fest at the end, you're going to get half chalk, and then the half is rolling the dice. And it's going to be luck. And that's the way it works. But when we get green races where drivers run where they practice and they finish where they run, then you know what's going to happen ahead of time, and you have very good ability of building a lineup because luck doesn't come in. It doesn't wreck your cars out. It doesn't hit you with pit penalties. It doesn't, you know, jeopardize your financial stake. It's just pretty much what happens is what happens, is what's supposed to happen. So then we look at the other two. I told you about Brett Keselowski. The last player would have been Dale Earnhardt Jr. And again, not chalk, but at 7,800, he fits into this lineup, and he was starting 23rd. Goes from 23rd, average running position of 18th, finishes 12th. So he definitely outperforms what he should have done. But he would have been a popular play because he's Dale Earnhardt Jr., but he was also starting 23rd at a track where he runs well. I believe in the spring race of Pocono, he had a poor finish, but that was because he shifted to first gear instead of third gear. This race, he was fine, finishes 12th. I would not by any means say he was a play that people were going to avoid. Let's compare him to drivers around his price range. So you say, well, I don't trust Dale Earnhardt Jr. I've got $8,000. I want to play somebody else. All right, so maybe play Clint Boyer. And if you did that, again, not a bad play. Clint Boyer started 7th, so you had to hold your breath a little. But he was fast in practice, 2nd on the long run. Now, mind you, I believe there's only 6 or 7 cars that made long runs. But he was 13th on a short run, 8th on the short run, starting 7th. That is a bit of a concern. But those Stuart Haas cars were starting to get pretty good last year. Probably weren't on board yet. I would have felt more comfortable going Dale Earnhardt Jr. But hey, Clint Boyer only scored what, 2 points less. So that wouldn't have killed you either. Definitely wouldn't have killed you. And you're going to see that when we go through really extreme green races, when drivers finish where they're supposed to finish, you can, if you're close, if you got it narrowed down to, like we just mentioned, like, oh, is it going to be Reagan? Is it going to be Cole Whit? Well, if you picked one of them, you probably did fine. One, you obviously have a chance at optimal lineup. The other one, you're going to do really well too. Ooh, is it going to be Clinton Boyer? Is it going to be Dale Earnhardt Jr.? Well, they both work out because there's not a lot of wrecks. There's not a lot of people making big moves on restarts. They both end up where they end up. See what I'm saying? Like, if it's a lot of wrecks at the end, then it's very much like you either choose wisely or your face melts off. That's the way it works at those races because of the restarts. Guys gain 5 positions, guys lose 5 positions. And a lot of that has to do with luck. In this case, you don't have those big swings, so everyone kind of just is where they are. If they were a good player in practice, they'll be fine in the race. And if you narrow it down, then there's going to be 3 or 4. Let's see if there's another guy in that $8,000 price range. Ricky Stenhouse would have been fine, but there's no way you're leaving $1,000 on the table and taking Stenhouse over Junior or Clint Boyer. Suarez, same case. You weren't going to leave $800 on the table to take Daniel Suarez starting 8th. Couldn't afford Chase Elliott. You could have gone to Kasey Kahne. That seems awfully cute. Again, you leave $600 on the table to take Kasey Kahne starting 12th. Probably not going to do that either. Ryan Newman, you may have fell for this trap. Starting 20th, $7,600. His average rank position was 14th. He finishes 16th, or he finishes 14th. So he did what he was supposed to do. And in practice, that's about the speed that he had. So not a surprise there. It's just that Junior started a little bit further back and finished just a little bit better. Other than that, that's pretty much where you would have been. Maybe you fell down the Ryan Newman hole, but then, I mean, if you took Newman, you still probably finished in the money. He scored 7 less fantasy points. He wasn't a bad play either, is the point. There isn't good plays and bad plays. And even, you know, we look at the 2018 Pocono race, there weren't good plays or bad plays. Although I'm saying Kenseth was a bad play, but it technically ended up being a good play. That's just not the right way of measuring it, to say a play is good or bad at those races where you have a bunch of wrecks. Now, at a race that goes completely green, then clearly there are good plays and bad plays. And Newman was fine. Junior was fine. Boyer were fine. They worked out. They did okay. They did exactly what they were supposed to do because the race actually was a race. It wasn't just some random luck. When you go to random luck races, good plays are bad plays, and bad plays are good plays, if that makes any sense. I don't really want to go much further. We're at the hour and 7 mark, and I've had fun. Hope you've had fun. Check out fanvice.com. Free stuff, paywall stuff. Sorry I haven't been around the Slack chat much lately. If you are a FanVice member, extremely busy. I know no one wants to hear that. Everyone is busy. I feel like, I don't know why I feel guilty even saying that, but I do. But I have been, and I apologize for not being around in the Slack chat or even anywhere. Consumed. My life is consumed. Any final parting words? No, I have really nothing else to say. I'm not a big fan of Pocono. I don't. So, Triple Light's fantastic.